This is Austin Pace with BYU Idaho Radio, and I'm joined today by Democrat House Representative Lauren Necochea from District 19. Necochea earned a BA in economics at Pomona College and a Master of Public Affairs degree from Princeton University. She currently sits on the Commerce and Human Resources Committee, the Environment, Energy, and Technology Committee, the Revenue and Tax Committee, and the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you for joining me, Representative.
It's a pleasure to be here, Austin.
Okay, so just to get started, what are your thoughts so far on the legislative session? What has gone well, and what are some things that you would like to see change?
Well, I think we've been focused a little too much on kind of sort of culture war legislation, if you will, and not enough on kind of the meat and potatoes that Idahoans need. The one positive step we took was towards allocating some money to school facilities. We know we have some serious problems with raw sewage under the cafeteria of a salmon school and then a Pocatello High School that partially burned because of faulty electrical wiring. But that was also tied up in a bill that's going to cut the revenue that funds school operations. So we're kind of, one step forward, one step back. And that's been disappointing to see.
So what has surprised you most then about this year's legislative session? Is it that cultural war that you're talking about? Or are there other surprises that have, I guess, caught you by surprise?
Yeah, I think that we aren't fixing some major issues we have. Our abortion ban is so extreme that 22% of our obstetric gynecologists have stopped practicing in Idaho because they don't have even a health exception. So if a pregnant patient has an infection that needs treatment or that requires an abortion and there's a fetus that's not going to survive, that would be the care to prevent a woman from becoming septic and potentially die. We aren't getting anywhere in terms of a health exception. The Republicans are refusing to hear that health exception, and they're just keeping on the books the exception they have that's for when death is imminent. And it means that doctors are on the phone talking to lawyers trying to get advice when they should be tending to a medical emergency.
So for my next question, I wanted to talk a little bit about House Bill 710. So on Wednesday, House Bill 710 passed the Idaho House. The bill follows years of attempts by the Idaho legislature to regulate materials that are deemed harmful to children in Idaho libraries. And I wanted to bring this up because of how often it's been brought up this legislative session. This is the third or fourth different draft of this kind of bill that we've heard. And it's just been a huge talking point. So the House approved this bill, House Bill 710, on a 47-23 vote. So could you tell me a little bit about this bill and what changes were made for this version of the library bill to pass after years of attempts?
Yeah, this bill still has things that librarians are telling us are a problem and that are just unworkable. And it stems from, I think, kind of an extreme interpretation of what's harmful to kids. We're hearing parents bringing in books that simply have a gay character, no sexual content, but a gay character, and that's being considered, obscene or objectionable. And, other just factual books that are about, just reproduction and biology, a book that I have that's developed by experts around how to just educate children about sexuality, that I have it in my home, that was held up as a bill that's a problem and has no place in the library. And so what we're really seeing is a handful of parents or just people, I think not necessarily parents, saying I don't want this stuff anywhere in the children's section. And then even if other parents want access to those books, but then the problem we're hearing from rural libraries is we can't put these books upstairs. Our library is just contained in one room. And so we can't guarantee that, no child can ever, pick up a book with a gay character. And the results of this, this bill, which allows people to just sue libraries and have these kind of guaranteed damages if they don't, you know, move books to different sections that they might not even have based on the structure of their building, is a problem, because it kind of creates this incentive to do this kind of vigilante lawsuits against libraries. And it could just be one single person who could just go around the state and harass all the libraries in the state over a certain book that they found objectionable. And, you know, local libraries already have processes in place. If someone wants to contest a book, if they don't think it's appropriate, those are local decisions, and we should just leave those local decisions in local hands. There's no need for this, you know, big bill from the legislature that we're hearing from librarians just really threatens their ability to stay open and serve the public.
So if it is just as simple as that, why do you believe that it's been passed through the legislature so many times with so many different drafts?
It's become this hot button issue, and I get these emails from people saying there's pornography in libraries, which is certainly not the case. So I think it's gotten distorted, and I think there are frankly just some politicians trying to get some mileage out of saying, you know, they're being tough on porn or something like that. Pornography has no place in our libraries, and isn't there. but it's become just this hot button thing where I think legislators are trying to use it to a political, some legislators are trying to use it to a political advantage on the Republican side.
So on to my next question. I wanted to talk a little bit about House Concurrent Resolution 35 that the House voted in favor of this morning, which would establish a traditional family values month. So could you give me your thoughts on the resolution, and why does the House, or why did the sponsor of this of the resolution feel that this was something important that needed to be addressed?
I don't know if I can speak to the motivation behind the sponsor, but I can tell you what I felt about the language. I felt that the language was very disrespectful to anyone who lives in a family outside. It said a biological mother and a biological father and kids, or who don't have, you know, traditional gender roles, which was the other kind of offensive language in the bill, because families come in all types of arrangements, your children are adopted or someone is a single parent, either because they adopted their children and wanted to form a family on their own, or because they got divorced or they left an abusive relationship. There are same-sex couples, you know, raising their kids. Same-sex couples have to go to a lot of trouble and overcome a lot of obstacles when they want to build a family. And so, you know, they're just as dedicated to serving the role of parent, if not more, than someone who just kind of falls into parenting. And so it really felt like a slap in the face to families that have different structures for whatever reason. And that was my objection to it, and had a very judgmental tone, and then seemed to suggest that there were some sort of traditional gender roles, like women staying at home and not having the same work opportunities as men, that I think are backwards thinking.
So this passed the House. How far do you see it? Do you see it going within the Senate, and with it being passed in the law, do you feel like it would pass in the law?
Who can say? I think, you know, I think it's one of those things that's kind of a red meat thing to the Republican base, or people are who feeling like the world is changing and they're being left behind if we accept different kinds of families. And I'm on the side of, you know, celebrating all kinds of families and doing what we can in this building to help them succeed. There was a lot of talk about how, you know, single parent families aren't, you know, those children face more challenges, but then we, from the same people who do very little, if not nothing, and even block attempts we might make to help those single parent families be more successful, like increasing access to childcare. So I feel like there's a, you know, we can, if we're going to talk the talk, we better walk the walk in helping these children be successful and not just give people a lecture about what their family should look like and what the makeup of the family should be. So, but that's all to say that, you know, this is kind of a red meat to the base bill. And because it doesn't, it's just words and it doesn't really change anything substantive, I think there is a good chance the Senate could take it up so that they can, you say, if they think their voters were like, oh, I voted for to support traditional family values, because that's something that might sound good, even if it's an insult to families that look a little different.
Thank you so much for your comments on that. So what are you most looking forward to for week 11 of the legislative session?
Well, I'll tell you that I'm really excited that we were able to stop the school voucher bill this week, and I'm hoping that concept can just kind of stay dead. That concept is to just give out cash, you know, $5,000 at a time per child if families aren't in the public school system. And what we've seen from other states is that these concepts, these voucher schemes, largely just replaced private dollars with public dollars. So kids who are already going to private school are going to be probably first in line. We are already seeing private schools trying to advertise this option to their clients, and they're going to be first in line for a first come, first serve voucher tax credit. And we know kind of the wealthier families will have the accountants and the connections to be able to be at the front of that line. And so I don't think it's going to increase access in any new services, but it would cost the state $50 million to start. And then the legislation also instructs the legislature to look at that expenditure and adjust it a couple of years down the road to meet the need. You know, if we send out this check to all the kids who are already in private school today, the cost would be about three times that $50 million a year. And we just don't have a dime to spare. You know, I recently mentioned all of this dire school facilities needs across the state. We've just really been neglecting our schools, and we just don't have money to spend on also subsidizing a parallel private school structure.
That was Democrat House Representative Lauren Necochea from District 19. Thank you so much for joining me, Representative.
Thank you, Austin.